coming straight up right after the break. He's from Covert Action Magazine. We're going to talk about their big event for the late famed whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. Thanks again, though, Glenn A.
Thank you.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Hey, welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Daniel Ellsberg, the man Richard Nixon once declared the most dangerous in America, died last month. Ellsberg famously leaked the so-called Pentagon Papers, revealing to the world the true face of America's war against Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. This month, a very special whistleblower summit and film festival and legacy tribute to Dan Ellsberg is slated for Washington, D.C. Covert Action Magazine, founded by the almost equally famous agent of revelation, Philip Agee, will be taking part, hosting the festival's final day event, Blowing the Whistle on Covert Warfare and Coercive Economic Sanctions Bonus Day. Jeremy Kuzmarov is a journalist and author who also serves as managing editor at CAM. Jeremy's book titles include Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. He's also one of the star-studded Blowing the Whistle panel, honoring Daniel Ellsberg's commitment to uncovering U.S. crimes against humanity. His latest article at CAM, House Foreign Affairs Committee marks anniversary of Cuba's July 2021 uprising with renewed calls for regime change, examines America's ongoing war against the country that sheltered the magazine's founder. Welcome back to the program, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, Jeremy, we can't talk about whistleblowers without recognizing first the world's preeminent prisoner of conscience, Julian Assange. He could be extradited from Britain's Belmarsh prison into the hands of the United States at any moment. Jeremy, what do you know about the latest progress of the Assange case, and what's your comment as a fellow newsman?
Well, I don't know all the latest detail, but I mean, I know how terrible it's been, absolute travesty to have somebody who exposed major crimes against humanity. He's being punished, and the perpetrator of those major crimes get to live the high life, and that's just sad. And it's sad that more people have not come out in support. I mean, there have been some very dedicated people who have carried out protests and written articles and letters and done everything they can to support him, but it should be a much larger number of people involved in this campaign, because this is just a absolute travesty of justice with serious implications as far as freedom of the press, just freedom in general. I mean, when you have a government that's carrying out such horrific atrocities and just lies to the public, and here's somebody who exposed that, and look what they do to him. So,
well, I noticed that some of his media collaborators on some of the biggest stories that WikiLeaks released are coming out now, I mean, years after the fact, and condemning his imprisonment and possible extradition to the U.S., saying what his team has been saying all along, that there's no chance of him, of Julian Assange, getting a fair shake in the U.S. court system.
And I mean, the cowardice of those calling themselves liberals or liberal media, and they're basically acquiescence to the Russiagate and its narrative, and their unwillingness to speak out in support of dissidents like Assange, or to call out the perpetrator of this criminal fraud, shows their cowardice. Just like the cowardice of others in history who acquiesced to monstrous regimes like the Nazi government and others.
Or like the monstrous government of Fidel Castro. Your article on the House Foreign Affairs Committee marks anniversary of Cuba's July 2021 uprising with renewed calls for regime change. The language in this is really harkens back to another era. I mean, if I was old enough, I would be thinking about 1961, and it seems that there hasn't been any movement at all, and they've just changed the names now from Castro to the next dictator in Cuba, disregarding everything about that place and its political system.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't know, I once read a book about, you know, it was titled The Stone Age Brain or something. I mean, you know, our society seemingly does evolve, you know, as far as technology. I mean, obviously human beings are very intelligent creatures, and, you know, we've developed an incredible level of technological development and have evolved in thinking in some other areas. Maybe, you know, there's a stronger push to combat racism, for instance. But I think a lot of the thinking of the dominant elite classes and a lot of people has not evolved from, you know, the 1950s, or exemplification of that, you know, this Cold War mentality has just come back with a bang, and so many people seem to subscribe to this Cold War mentality that's driving support for the war in Ukraine, a potential war on China. And it's the same with regard to Cuba. They haven't evolved in their thinking, and the Cuban regime is depicted as this dark force that has just imposed a tyranny on Cuba. And I mean, they don't look at the history. I mean, the Cuban Revolution, I mean, liberated Cuba from a tyrannical government dictator, Fulgencio Batista, who was supported by the United States. And there was a whole half century of American neocolonialism. You know, I was at this event, and you listen to their speeches, and it's the same rhetoric, and there's no historical consciousness of any of these people, how Cuba had been a neo-colony of the United States. Before that, it was colonized by the Spanish. And, I mean, in Cuba, that's the day of liberation. You know, we celebrate the 4th of July. Because America became independent, was liberated from British colonial rule, and the Cuban Revolution is a time of celebration that day for Cuban, because that's the day that they were liberated from foreign neocolonialism, specific dictatorship of Fulgencio Batista. And that's just, either forgotten or not. The Cuban exile community generally were the elites who profited. You know, they were the 1% who did well under the dictatorship and profited, had, connection with foreign capital or were large landowners. And they were the targets of the Cuban Revolution, and they were forced to migrate. So they had a bitterness to Castro, just like you had, Russians in 1917 who supported the Tsar and who benefited, or part of the inner circle of the Tsar, or among the 1% who owned all the land and exploited the peasantry. And they were very bitter when the Russian Revolution took hold in 1917. And you had, Southern slave owners who were unhappy when the slaves were liberated in the U.S. South. So, I mean, it's a retrograde worldview of a class of people who profit off the exploitation of their own countrymen, and they can't accept that their country was liberated from the tyranny, that they benefited on that, and their country evolved, but they haven't. And now it's their kids, it's the next generation, seemingly embrace the same worldview as their parents, although I think some in the younger generation may have more open-minded approach. And the Cuban government now is forging, strong relation with Russia, with China. And I mean, it's had its ups and downs, but the way it's presented in these forums, in the Miami exile communities, politicians in the United States, they just want to, they haven't evolved in their thinking, and they just want to crush. I mean, they're like bullies. They just want to crush and subjugate Cuba. And it's like, how dare they stand up for themselves against us, basically. And it's just like a bully. So everybody should be offended by the behavior of those people, including these politicians like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's just a big bully standing up there. It's a moral outrage to anybody with decency.
Well, when you talk about the white Russians or the descendants of the Cuban expatriates from the revolution, you could talk about the representatives of Taiwan's ruling elite as well. And fittingly, China has mixed itself into this latest Cuba imbroglio, with the Foreign Affairs Committee insisting that there are bases, military bases being set up by China in Cuba now. This is echoes of the missile crisis in 1961. How are we supposed to receive this kind of information?
Well, there's been a pattern, you know, of lies about Cuba for decades that have been used to justify heavy-handed interference, including a deadly embargo, including the, you know, Bay of Pigs, military attacks using exiles, assassination attempts, you know, terrorist acts. You know, there have been a lot of invented stories to justify those kind of policies as some kind of moral or humanitarian undertaking. And I mean, recently, I think Cuba was accused of sending combat troops into Venezuela, and that was false. They were accused of making diplomats sick, some kind of Havana syndrome, and that was another hoax. So, you know, there's that pattern. In this case, I mean, it's never been verified. There's allegedly some kind of signal intelligence base, but it's never been verified. So do you trust a serial liar who repeatedly lies for political purpose? And if it's not verified, it's just being used, yeah, to fuel hostility. And it's kind of feeding into the xenophobia and xenophobia in the American public that, oh, here the communist threat from Cuba, now we have to add the Chinese to the equation, and they have the spy base, and they're going to use Cuba as a platform to assault America. That's the kind of narrative being advanced, and it feeds into this xenophobia and xenophobia and jingoism.
Well, the congressman that you feature in your article, Michael McCaul, a Texas Republican, he intones the Cuban Missile Crisis and comparing what's happening in China with China allegedly setting up military bases in Cuba as being the same as the missile crisis with the Soviets back in the day that was so dangerous. But he also says, and this is I found that you cite in your article, a connection with the Belt and Road Initiative. And that seems to me to be the real turning point here, not only with what's going on with the belligerence against Cuba, that's an ongoing thing, of course, but also if we look further at Russia, this war in Ukraine being a proxy war against Russia to take it out of the field, some have surmised, before a broader war against China by the United States and its allies. It seems to me that the real terror in the so-called West and amongst the NATO nations is the Belt and Road Initiative and China leading the global economy for the rest of this century.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a threat of a good example, and it's kind of jealousy. I mean, because China is actually helping countries to really develop, and as you know, a lot of countries want to ally more and more with China, and they see that the future, and they don't really have a need or interest in kowtowing to the United States anymore. And so, you know, that spelled the end of the era of American unipolar power and dominance. So they have to try and attack that. And there have been some, initiatives to try and replicate, the Belt and One Road, but by the United States. But I mean, and Britain, they were trying to forge some kind of alternative, but that hasn't really gone anywhere. And I mean, the United States, continues to use like the World Bank and IMF really to benefit, American and Western multinational corporations and squeeze these countries, and the population sees that, and they see, I mean, China, has developed their own lending banks, and they have a lot less strings attached to the loans. And with the Belt and Road, they're genuinely helping to promote economic development and growth in those countries. So, again, more and more countries are turning to China, including Cuba. And the U.S. is just jealous, and they're lashing back with this kind of nasty rhetoric and, outright military response invasions that we're seeing.
Well, you mentioned the Congressperson Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that and she was there holding forth outside of this event that you mentioned is across the street from the Bay of Pigs Museum. I mean, who would have known? But acting as a number one porker, perhaps, she says of the Cuban government, the current Cuban government, you quote her as saying they are, quote, thugs who thrive on violence and lash out against patriots armed with nothing but the truth. A bit of projection there, and especially considering Cuba's history and the role of the mafia in the island under the previous government of Batista before the revolution.
Yeah, and I mean, what would she say of the government of Haiti? You know, the U.S. Has provided, I was reading yesterday, that they're providing something like $100 million in police aid to Haiti. And I mean, there have been some real thugs running Haiti that the U.S. government has supported as an antidote to the left. You know, like Jean-Bertrand Aristide was kidnapped and ousted in the coup. And since then, Haiti had been ruled by, I think, thugs, actual thugs, that have been heavily supported by the United States and committed horrific human rights abuses and atrocities. So what does Wasserman Schultz have to say about that government? I mean, she's picking on Cuba for ideological reasons, and they're playing up this, you know, protest in 2021. But really, those protests were quite limited as far as the numbers, and a lot of the people had support either directly or indirectly from the National Endowment for Democracy, which funds civil society group and basically funds uprising, color revolutions in countries that the U.S. doesn't like or has more of a socialist model of government. And they were even funding hip-hop artists in Cuba and trying to sow disaffection among minority group Afro-Cubans. But, you know, tens of thousands took to the streets to defend the Cuban Revolution. And, I mean, probably some Cubans would like some change in policy in their government, but not the overthrow of the government or the system, some reforms, not regime change and Cuba's reemergence as a neo-colony of the United States, which is, you know, that basically the U.S. interest. They want to go back to the 50s. And as you're saying, yeah, that's when Wasserman Schultz either never took a history course or, just has a clear political vendetta against a left-wing government. So omits that the U.S. supported real thugs, as you say, Batista, who was a murderous dictator who allowed Cuba to be a mafia playground in the 1950s. And that's what the Cuban Revolution emerged as a reaction to and liberated the country from.
Well, it's maybe not surprising that the former government, the Republican government, Donald Trump, overturned the Obama administration's progress on relations. But what is surprising is that the current Democratic government goes along with Donald Trump when it comes to its policy on Cuba. They're even more belligerent.
Yeah, well, 2 points. One is it's basically a different approach of the elite, because the Obama policy, on one hand, yeah, it was nice that there was the movement to restore diplomatic relations and at least a limit to, although the embargo was kept in place. You know, that embargo had been devastating for Cuba's economy. And really, you know, Obama, I think, even directly said that he felt that the transition to capitalism would come better by opening up the system and allowing, you know, U.S. corporations to come in and take over the Cuban economy. And that's basically the goal. So it's just really a different strategy for achieving that goal. I mean, yeah, it's a nicer strategy, but at the end of the day, Obama was committed to destroying Cuban socialism and the tremendous gain that the country has achieved since the Cuban Revolution. Now, Trump, yeah, when he came in, he went back and adopted, again, a hardline approach. Biden has kind of doubled down. I think when Biden was campaigning, he may have made or people hoped that he would return to the Obama softer, you know, strategy. But, yeah, he's kind of doubled down on Trump's strategy and, you know, sustained the, you know, harsh embargo. And I think his policy may be even harsher than Trump's. And you have a figure like Robert Menendez, who's the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who is an ardent regime change hawk when it comes to Cuba, and he'd been an influential driver of U.S. foreign policy in the Biden administration.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm sitting today with Jeremy Kuzmarov. Jeremy is a journalist and author. He also serves as managing editor at CAM, that is Covert Action Magazine. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. We're talking around his latest article, House Foreign Affairs Committee Marks Anniversary of Cuba's July 2021 Uprising with renewed calls for regime change. I would say that that uprising in Cuba is probably somewhat on a similar scale to what happened in Russia recently with the Wagner group or Wagner group. But there's other things on the magazine now. And as always, it's just chock full of fascinating articles. Jeremy, you've got another article up. Mainstream media colludes with U.S. government to conceal source of serious, heartbreaking humanitarian crisis. Damascus was just being bombed yesterday and today by Israel for the umpteenth time. And you don't hear much about that. But people in the States and Canada probably don't, most of them realize that there's a large occupation of Syria going on by America, and the American military is just strengthening their forces there to further facilitate, it would seem, the theft of Syria's oil and grain resources. What's this article about, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think you summarized some important aspects of what's going on there in Syria. And yeah, the article shows how the country's humanitarian catastrophe resulting from the civil war and then the earthquake was blamed on Bashar al-Assad. And, if you watch 60 Minutes, another mainstream media, read the New York Times, you'll hear about or read about how terrible Assad is and what he's done to his own people. But then, there's a new documentary by Mark Taliano that I was reviewing that I would recommend listeners look up, and they could see a link in my article to it. And that documentary, he actually went to Syria and interviewed many people in Syria. And they said that the media was totally opposite of what they said, and that Syria had been subjected to a foreign terrorist attack, and that's what caused the civil war and tore up their country, and that the U.S. continues to adopt the harsh sanction like they're doing on Cuba. I mean, that's one reason that Cuba has struggled, especially since the fall of the Soviet Union, with the harsh economic embargo that had been imposed on, has been designed to destroy its economy as part of the regime change operation, turn people against that government, and it can fuel their propaganda about, oh, how bad the country is and the government is, and people are so poor. Well, they've instituted this harsh embargo that impinges on the economy, and that's what they're doing in Syria. They're trying to starve the people. Need embargoes, prevent needed goods from getting into the country, and makes it very hard to do business and even deprive people of medicines. And, Syria was a country ravaged by civil war, so the embargo, the country used to be self-sufficient, as far as food production and its economy, but with civil war, the people are more, desperate, and then with this blockade and embargo in place, they can't get supplies or goods in to rebuild the country and the vital necessities, including medicines, and people are dying, and they want to blame Assad. I mean, Assad was popular because he was, considered to mobilize the people to stand up to the jihadist terrorists that took over. There were protests that erupted in 2011. There may have been some legitimate grievances. But like I was saying, in Cuba, a lot of people maybe want some reform in the government, but they don't want regime change in the country being taken over by foreigners or basically agents of foreigners are being torn up in a civil war. And though what were some legitimate protests were hijacked by these jihadists, and Assad was able to rally the people and defeat these terrorists and religious extremists. And he had always had a pluralistic model. And he was a strong, independent leader. I mean, his father had been leader going back to 1970, and they had, they were more authentic. They were essentially authentic nationalists. and he'd stood up to the Israelis who'd occupy, you know, Golan Heights. So he had a, you know, strong base of support, and people rallied behind him and defeated the terrorist forces. And, you know, he's trying to rebuild the country, and now he's been invited back in the Arab League, but the Western media blames him for everything, and it absolves the West of any responsibility or acknowledgement by people in the United States or Western countries of what their governments have done to basically terrorize the people of Syria and cause this humanitarian catastrophe. And it really is heart-wrenching. If you, you know, hear what people say about what life is like in Syria, it's horrible. They don't have the electricity. They don't have enough food. The schools were closed. There's no job prospects for young people. One doctor, you know, because I also attended a webinar and discussed that a bit in the article, and this doctor was one of the speakers, and she said there's just a total breakdown of social mores in society. The youth are have no hope. And they start turning on each other and their gangs, and, you know, crime, and just like a breakdown because, you know, nothing functions in society. And it's just horrible. But, I mean, the West is so complicit, so central. Well,
it sounds, Jeremy, like a mission accomplished moment for this whole effort against the Assad government, but I have a feeling that they're not gonna succeed in the long run. We're fast out of time, and we haven't even talked about the whistleblowers. Well, the Whistleblower Summit and Film Festival and Legacy Tribute to Dan Ellsberg. It's going on at the end of this month. Do you want to give it a plug in the last minute we got?
Sure. Well, if you're in Washington, D.C., yeah, there's going to on July 30th, there's going to be a tribute to Dan Ellsberg. And then on July 31st, we're having an event at the Busboy and Poets in Washington. We're going to have a panel on covert warfare and economic sanctions. And we're going to have different speakers, and I'll be one of the speakers. And another speaker is Sarah Flounders, who published a book about sanctions. And how, like what I was describing in Syria, you know, these sanctions have a devastating humanitarian effect, and they're often imposed for purely, you know, political reasons, and as part of, you know, political vendettas against left-wing governments or governments that try and stand up for their own people and defy the U.S. Efforts to colonize them or transform their country into a neo-colony. So she'll be one of the featured speakers, and hopefully it'll be an important discussion. And yeah, the more people know about these topics, the more we can develop a social movement to combat them and to develop more humane and sensible policies.
Well, and it all comes at the end of the week-long Whistleblower Summit virtual and film festival.
Yeah, so yeah, people can go to our website on www.covertactionmagazine.com, and you'll see the ad for our event and links to the broader program on whistleblowers. And yeah, I think we need, as we were discussing at the beginning, we need to support whistleblower like Julian Assange in the face of, you know, tremendous corruption that we're seeing in our governments and a lot of blowback. I mean, our societies are starting to really fray. I think both in the United States and Canada, we're seeing more and more violence in our society, more inequality, more signs of social breakdown here. And we really need a movement to push back, and we need to support whistleblowers who are exposing corruption. And we need to try and fight to restore integrity in our institutions, whether they're schools or in the government.
Well, again, it's Jeremy Kuzmarov. His article is House Foreign Affairs Committee Marks Anniversary of Cuba's July 2021 Uprising with the Renewed Calls for Regime Change. Thanks a lot for coming on again, Jeremy?
My pleasure. Yeah, anytime.
And I'd also like to thank Glenn Michaelchuk over there at Peace Alliance Winnipeg and the Association for United Ukrainian Canadians. Till the next time, eh?
Absolutely.
When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, ever, that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of CanadaLand, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.